If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.
On this edition of the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking, we talk with Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline about the Cubs farm system and some of the decisions Theo Epstein and his front office are facing with some of their best and most impactful young talent.
Let's play two.
Welcome in to our Cubs Talk podcast, brought to you by our great partners at Wintrust, home of Cubs checking. With our Cubs insider, Tony Andracki, I'm David Kaplan. We welcome Jim Callis, who has been a fixture on the amateur minor league scene for a long, long time with MLB Pipeline and Baseball America. He's the go-to guy, the guru, and a Chicago guy. So thank you for taking time for us.
Yeah, glad to.
As you look at the Cubs system, I'm actually stunned as I went through it. Theo gets hired, his first draft's 2012.
Right.
Here we are 2019, and they've developed zero impact pitching. It's almost impossible, right?
It is. And you're talking about guys, Jason McLeod was leading the scouting department. They had success. They had John Lester in Boston. They had Clay Buchholz in Boston. They found guys there. The crazy thing is I was doing a story about a month ago, and I was like trying to figure out exactly how dire it was. The guy who's had the most impact in Chicago, homegrown pitcher, to this point, almost 8 years later, is Rob Zastrzyzny.
Right.
It's just crazy. The best pitcher they've drafted and signed is Zach Godley, who they traded. And do you know how many innings they got out of homegrown pitchers last year for 162 games?
40-ish? 35?
44 innings total. Okay. And you're right. I mean, these are guys who've had success, and they've obviously had a lot of success with hitters in Chicago, but it's crazy, and obviously it's kind of limiting, it's hamstrung them a lot.
Funny story about Rob Zastrzyzny, Rob Z, as a lot of people call him. In spring training last year, he started walking through in one of the first couple of days. I don't know if he was going to a locker or whatever else, but a security guard stopped him and was like, hey, you can't be here. This is for players only. And he's trying to explain, like, I am a player. But the security guard didn't even recognize him. And I just thought it was very ironic because you're right. Even a year ago at that point, he was still the most impactful homegrown starting pitcher. That's still the case. But he's like, this is a guy that even the security at personnel at spring training still don't even recognize, and that's the most impactful homegrown starting pitcher in a decade.
So how, if you had to grade them on what they've done from 2012 to 2019 on bringing impact talent into the organization through the draft and international signings, Chris Bryant, a blind man, could have drafted.
Drafted him. Well, I mean, two teams passed on him, right? Or one team passed on him, yeah.
Would you give them a D, a C? What would you give them?
Well, you also have to look at the guys who aren't there. And, Gleyber Torres isn't there, but they trade him for Chapman. And they don't win in 2016 without Chapman.
True.
They might, if they don't win another World Series, argue that you want Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease back. But they got Jose Quintana, who had a great contract for him. I'd give them a B. I mean, they used a lot of those young guys, whether it was guys who got to Chicago or guys they traded. And they won a World Series. They made, four straight playoff appearances? I mean, these are things as... I mean, I know you're a huge Cubs fan. I didn't grow up in the area, but as a Cubs fan, do you ever think we'd be saying things like that? They won a World Series, they won four straight.
But they've had much more success trading Cashner for Rizzo, acquiring Arrieta, John Lester as a
free agent,
Kyle Hendricks as a trade.
No, you're right. But I'd give them in terms of you still have a number of guys. I mean, Bryant, they were picking two, but they still took him. And the Astros, if they hadn't taken Mark Appel, were going to take Colin Moran. They weren't going to take Bryant. And everybody thinks the Astros are geniuses about everything. Schwarber, you could say what you want about him, but they got Schwarber, and he wasn't a consensus guy where they necessarily took him. I guess Javi Baez was before them, but they've had some successes. I'd give them a B. You know, it's like their overall thing, I think, would look a lot different if Gleyber Torres was at second, mm-hmm. and Eloy was in right field, and Dylan Cease was in the rotation. But you still have to give them credit, I think, for guys, even if they traded them, that they did sign and develop those guys.
So where do you grade them now as a system? I know they've got Braylon Marquez and Brennan Davis and Cole Roeder. There's a handful of guys. Mm-hmm. Where is their system?
It's in the bottom third of Major League Baseball somewhere. It's funny, MLB won't let us, they don't want us to necessarily identify somebody as the worst system, so we only rank 15. The Cubs aren't the worst, but we rank the top 15, and the Cubs aren't in the top 15. I don't think they're particularly close to top 15 right now. So they'd be somewhere in the 20s. You know, like you said, they've got some guys. You know, Nico Horner came up, kind of emergency call-up was interesting. You know, Miguel Amaya is one of the better catchers. You know, Brennan Davis, Braylon Marquez, there's hope for the future, but it's not particularly deep, and they still don't have, like, at least pitchers you're pointing to and saying, okay, that guy's going to be a big contributor in 2020. I mean, maybe Albert Alzolay, but I don't think he's being considered, you know, as a real focal point. And Braylon Marquez is really interesting, really came on at the end of last year, but he's still probably, optimistically, a year and a half away. So it's like, I don't think the system's
how good is he?
He's really interesting. I mean, pitchers, there's always a lot of attrition, but he's a lefty who can reach triple digits. And he was really overpowering in the second half and started throwing a lot more strikes. So if that's for real, if he keeps what he found in the second half, he can keep that going, he'll probably be considered one of the best left-handed pitching prospects in the game next year.
Do you think Marquez can stick as a starter, or do you think long-term he probably ends up as like a reliever back into the bullpen guy?
Yeah, I think he could. I mean, again, it's going to come down to strike throwing and control on command and that type of stuff. But he made huge strides with that in the second half of last year. And he's still pretty young. I mean, nobody was, like, writing him off, like, oh, like, starter reliever, we're not sure because he's 23. He's still really, really young.
So I'm watching us play this year, and I'm getting ready to do the postgame show. And it's like the sixth or seventh inning. It's against the Braves. And I turned to my partner, David DeJesus, and I said, well, where's our Ronald Acuna Jr.? Or where's our Juan Soto?
Those guys are in New York and Chicago right now, yeah. On the other side of the field. I mean, Torres and Jimenez would have been those guys. You know, Marquez, I think, is the guy they're going out. I mean, they have some lower-level guys that they kind of like, but not at that level. But it's interesting. Like I said before, I think people really look at the Cubs' international and player development programs differently had they not traded Torres and Eloy Jimenez, because you'd be talking about two of the best young players in baseball. They just happened to sacrifice those guys for the cause.
And speaking about Miguel Amaya, obviously there's so much right now, trade rumors, Wilson Contreras. So let's just play a fantasy world. Cubs trade Wilson Contreras this winter. What's the hope for Miguel Amaya? What's the timeline that he could be at Wrigley Field, and what might he be once he gets there?
I think he's got a chance to be pretty solid both ways. Like, he's a better, like, right now at this stage of his development, comparing him to Wilson, I'd project him as a better defender, but I don't think the bat will... I mean, he'll hit enough to be a regular, but I don't think the bat's as good as Wilson. So, mm-hmm. You know, you're hoping for maybe the same kind of value, just kind of getting there in a different way. I mean, they pushed him pretty quickly for a young guy, but it's not like he's put up big numbers. So I think in terms of a timetable, you know, whether you have Wilson or not, like, he's probably not ready until some point in 2021 at the earliest. And it's a different standard. You know, this is a team that's trying to win. So when a guy comes into your, you know, it's not like, hey, it's the Orioles or the Tigers. Right. Hey, he's, you know, succeeded in AAA. Like, you need the guy to produce when he gets there. So realistically, if you're talking about him, you know, like, really holding his own, that might be 2022.
As you look at possible guys that could be here this year, and I'm not talking about number one starters, but that could be a bullpen piece. Are there a couple guys that could be close besides Alzolay?
Yeah, I mean, it's more kind of up and down guys. You know, it's, I mean, I think Alzolay is really, you know, guy. I know they like, you know, Trevor Miller a little bit, but, you know, he's more of that kind of back of the rotation starter. You know, they don't really have a guy you'd point to and say, yeah, that guy could play a key role. Like, I mean, I would hope they'd have more than 44 homegrown innings this year, but, like, you know, I know last year they didn't have a homegrown pitcher. You know, they developed guys like Hendricks a little bit, but they didn't have a purely homegrown pitcher on their opening day roster. And I don't know if there's a lock. I don't know if there's necessarily a guy who would make the opening day roster.
How surprised are you that Albert Almora Jr. has struggled to the degree that he has, because he was the sixth overall pick in the country and the first pick of the Theo regime?
Yeah, and it's funny because, and you probably have heard this, they thought they were getting Carlos Correa. Like, Carlos Correa had these great workouts for a lot of teams.
I was at his workout at Wrigley.
They still talk about, like,
I think hitting the ball in the right field bleachers, crushing it.
The story I heard is, like, they thought they were getting him. I mean, the Astros were very secretive, and he wasn't. He was rising up draft boards, but nobody was sure. They had a pre-draft deal, and they had the deal done. They thought they were getting him. And the story I heard was that Jason and Jed had to go grab Theo, figure out who they were going to pick after the Astros took Carlos Correa, because the Astros were never telling him who they picked. And I think Theo's comment was something along the lines of, well, at least we know what a first ballot Hall of Fame workout looks like. That'll be their takeaway. Even when in Almora, I mean, they took him in a spot where he was going to go. They didn't overdraft him. Like Schwarber, that surprised the people. But Almora was going, I think he might have gone 7, but he was going in that 6-10 range. Great defender was his reputation. But there were some teams that had a question on how much impact the bat was really going to have. Obviously, the Cubs thought he'd have more than he has. But there were some concerns about that. And, the talk was, for teams who weren't on him as high, that, okay, it is good defense. Teams always worry about the guys who play plus defense but don't have plus speed. And I think his defense has held up. I think that part's been okay. But there are teams who are I don't think there's a lot of impact in the bat, and unfortunately it's played out that way.
With Nico Horner, we got a little taste of what he could do for 3 weeks there. But what do you think about him long term? I mean, he has to stop chasing as much and start working the pitchers back into the zone, but he looks like he can be a pretty special player.
Yeah, I think he can be. I mean, I cut him a little slack because nobody was expecting him to be up in September. Right. And you look, he was drafted the year before, and he missed almost that whole first summer. He was hurt, and he went to the fall league, and he missed time last year when he got hurt too. So it's not even like he had the full year and a half of pro ball. It's funny, comparing him to Almora, Nico was a guy who went, I think, 24th overall, and wasn't really projected as a first-round pick by a lot of clubs. It was kind of, I think, seen as more of a sandwich or early second-round pick. And it was funny. So I saw him in the fall league because he only played about 6-10 games. He got hurt. So they were giving him more at-bats in the fall league, which is pretty, they don't send, Chris Bryant went there, but you don't usually send a lot of guys to the fall league first year out of the draft. And I had a lot of pro scouts I know who don't necessarily do amateur coverage asking me, why'd this guy last 24 picks? Is there something wrong with his makeup? This guy should have been a higher pick. He looked great. He was getting Ian Kinsler comps down there. I think he's definitely going to hit. I think he's got more power. He didn't hit a lot of home runs at Stanford, but the Cubs have done a couple things with his swing, and I think he's even surprised them with how much, he's not going to be a 30 home run guy, but he can drive the ball, and he might be a 15 homer, 35, 40 double guy. Probably winds up at second base for me, but I think that's fine. Javi goes over to short, and I do think, he probably is not on the opening day roster, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's their starting second baseman by midseason, depending on how the roster shakes out.
Yeah, I look and I keep thinking, can the Cubs find another shortstop, put Javi at third if they move Bryant in a deal? Do you project Javi is he could be there the whole career at short, or will he outgrow the position because he's got the power to be a corner guy?
Yeah, I mean, the great thing about Javi is, one, I think you can play him anywhere. Two, his instincts, I don't know, that he's, necessarily your quickest shortstop in the big leagues, but, his instincts and just his feel for the game are so good that he plays a really good shortstop. Yeah, I mean, at some point, maybe when he's in his 30s, he loses a step, you have to move him, but I think you could play him at shortstop for a while. And it's funny, with Javi, I always think back to the year they won the World Series, and I wonder, if Kyle Schwarber doesn't get hurt, one, I think they would continue to try to mess around with Schwarber as a catcher, which I think would hurt his bat. But two, I don't know how many at-bats Javi gets that year. Because they'd signed Zobrist. Javi was on the team, but I think it might have been one of those years he gets 125 at-bats, and then they trade him. Because at the time, he really didn't have a spot to play. They were always talking about trading him. So it's always, looking back at that, made me think, and they won the World Series too, and Schwarber made it back. But if Schwarber doesn't get hurt, I wonder where Javi Baez is today.
If you remember back to that draft in 2011.
Yep.
Jason McLeod has on the air said to me, we were picking at 10. Javi went 9.
Yep.
He said we were in San Diego at 10, and if he had been there at 10, we would never have taken him. That wasn't their kind of player. They took Corey Spangenberg, and Javi's a stud.
Yeah, and part of that, though, was the rules at the time. Spangenberg was a compensation pick because they had not signed their guy, their first-round pick the year before, Carsten Whitson. And at the time, that pick was only protected for 1 year. So they had to take a guy at 10 who they knew was going to sign. Spangenberg was a late first, kind of like I was talking about Nico Horner. He wasn't a top 10 pick, but they had to take a guy that they knew would sign. If you took a guy who belonged at 10, then he had all kinds of leverage over you because if you don't sign him, you lose the pick. But, yeah, it's interesting. Javi, I don't think it was so much it was a bad kid. He's just the exuberance we see now that everybody kind of enjoys and let the kids play. it doesn't necessarily play as well, like on the amateur side, with scouts sometimes.
Or even in the minors.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there were teams that were like, who is this guy? He was a little theatric even then in high school. And I think there were teams wondering, like what's going on with this guy? Because I think he even had, didn't he have the tattoo on the back of his neck?
He
even
did. And Tim Wilkin tells the story that 2 weeks before the draft, he's at some other scouting event, and he sees Jason McLeod. They go, oh, you want to grab a beer after it? Sure. Yeah. And Jason said, all right, you're 10. You're at 9, we're at 10. Who are you taking? Because you can't trade picks. And he said, I'm taking a shortstop. He said, kid, Lindor won't be there.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't care if he is. I'm not taking him if he's on the board. He said, who are you taking? Javi Baez. Yeah. And he said, oh, my God. I couldn't believe it. Thank God they have him.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's and we'll see how it plays out. But, I mean, I think it's going to be, not that Javi's going to be cheap, you know, a lot easier to re-sign Javi Baez than it would be Chris Bryant. So I mean, we'll see what happens with the grievance. I don't see how you could trade Chris Bryant if you're trying to win now. I mean, if you lose him to free agency eventually, they're still trying to win the next 2 years. I don't see how you trade him and that doesn't hurt your team.
So with the Bryant move too, I mean, what do you think a nice package of return would be? Obviously, you know, if they want some big league talent, whether that's a pitcher to go in the rotation or maybe a bat to replace Bryant. But prospect-wise, what do you think would have to be back in return to get rid of Bryant?
I mean, if it's me, I mean, I'm sure Theo and Jed enjoy hearing me tell them how to do their jobs.
Everybody else does.
I'm not trading Chris Bryant because I just don't think I can get value that's going to help me win. And B, I mean, you mentioned you're like young. Yeah, they'd want young, big league talent, starting pitcher. Like, who's giving those guys up, really? Like, you know, you might get a guy like maybe you get like, and he's not young. He's not that far. Like Noah Syndergaard, who's a couple years away from free. It's
just Max Fried, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I like Max Fried. I can't trade Chris Bryant and Max Fried. Like, Max Fried's no lock. I mean, I know he had a really good year last year, but that's like, I mean, he's already had Tommy John. That's his first really good year as a starter. So, like, to me, I'll answer the question. I would want, I guess Max Fried would be the type of starter I have to get back in the deal, but then we'll play on Braves. Okay, you're giving me Max Fried, and then I want Christian Pache or Drew Waters, one of your two stud outfield prospects. I want Ian Anderson or Kyle Wright, who's one of your two stud, they have a lot of stud pitching prospects. I'm coming after three or four of your top prospects.
And then they're going to go,
and they're going to say, well, then we're giving you 22 years of cost control for 2 years of Chris Bryant, and they probably won't do it. But, it would be hard for me to trade Chris Bryant. But you would have to play. I don't think anybody's ever untouchable, but you would have to. It's the same thing with the Red Sox and Mookie Betts, and I know he's a year closer. I'm not trading Mookie Betts for and no knock at these, like Jock Peterson, who's kind of a platoon player, and Keibert Ruiz, who's like their number two catching prospect. No, like if I'm trading Mookie Betts, I want Gavin Lux and I want Dustin May. And I mean, I know I'm not getting Walker Buehler. You're gonna have to pay hard if I'm giving you Chris Bryant or Mookie Betts.
Would you trade Wilson Contreras?
It would depend on the deal. Again, to me, the window's tough because we talked about all the problems developing pitching. Like they don't have a lot of young pitching. So it's not like you're looking at this and saying, oh, they're going to contend for the next 8 years. No, I mean, I think they'll figure something out, but they're going to have to make a lot of pitching moves. So, like, yeah, if I could get some pitching I thought would help, I would really seriously consider it, but I would not – the whole luxury tax thing makes, like – I know the Rickets spent a lot of their own money to refurbish the park. The franchise is worth $3.5 billion right now. Like,
right.
I don't – like, again, I'm not a Cubs fan, so I didn't grow up there. But, like, I don't want to hear about $208 million and we can't – you could go over $208 million and pay some luxury tax. I don't want to hear that. So if they're trading Contreras because they're trying to get under the $208, I don't want to hear that. Like, I don't think trading him just for money – because, again, if you're trying to win, you're going to be taking a hit at catcher. Like, you're downgrading a catcher if you trade Wilson Contreras. And, like, shoot, as of now, like, I don't know what the Cubs rotation is going to look like in 2022 or 2023. So I'm not just assuming, oh – like, we're going to continue, like the window, they might have to retool for a year or two in 2022 or 2023. So I'm trying to win now, too.
In talking about the luxury tax, you know, one of the other penalties would be forfeiting draft picks.
If you jack it way up.
Right. How much do you think that, like, comes into play? Because GMs and team presidents nowadays, like, they're hoarding draft picks and they're hoarding these prospects and stuff. Like, how much do you think that comes into play at all?
Well, I mean, teams are constantly referring to it, so it's real. I'm just saying, like, if I'm – I know the Yankees just got cold, but, like, even the Yankees reset.
Yeah, and, like, 2018, we they did not exceed it.
We didn't have the Yankees or Dodgers really going after Machado or Harper that hard. You know, the Dodgers – I mean, the Dodgers have a lot of young talent, so they've managed it well. But, like, if I'm a fan of any big market franchise, I'm not saying you want to go way over every year. Like, you know, the Red Sox, you know, had their pick moved down 10 spots last year, but they won the World Series. Nobody's complaining. Even the Red Sox scouting department isn't complaining. Right. Oh, geez, like our first round pick got downgraded 10 spots. Like, they'll show you their World Series ring, and you're trying to compete. And I just think these teams are making money. I'm not buying and counting. I'm not talking about just the Cubs. But teams are making money year to year when you have some teams complaining. And even if you're not making money year to year, the franchise is almost worth, I think, four times what the Ricketts paid for it. However many years. I don't think it's been 10 years.
Yeah, $845 million.
Yeah. So, like, even if they were losing, and again, I'm not saying they should do this, but even if the Cubs were losing $100 million a year, when they sell the club, whenever that is, they're still coming. They could lose $100 million a year for, like, 30-something years and still come out ahead. It's insane. So, anyway, like, when I hear the Contreras talk, again, if you were getting young pitching, okay, I could see that. But if this is, hey, we're trying to position ourselves with the luxury tax, and we don't know what Brian's going to cost in Baez, I think that's taking a step back, and you're hurting your team.
Appreciate all your time. Keep up the great work.
Thanks.
There you go. Sure. That's Jim Callis. He is the best minor league and draft expert in the industry. All right, that is going to put a wrap on this edition of our Cubs Talk podcast, presented by our great partners at Wintrust. For Tony Andracki, I'm David Kaplan. We will see you next time. Unfortunately, not from sunny San Diego, but back in the studios in Chicago.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.